Welcome to another episode of The Cubic Report. I'm once again happy to have Greg Thomas with us. This will be our 14th podcast together. The last few times we have been discussing effective communication skills. Going back to August 2022, Greg and I have been discussing an ongoing series of thought-provoking topics on subjects of personal leadership development and business leadership. Greg is a business consultant, author, keynote speaker, and a personal life coach. They've gotten to know very well over a decade ago, probably more like 15 years. As a reminder, you can learn more about Greg's training skills on his YouTube site. Simply type in Leadership Excellence Channel. Once again, Leadership Excellence Channel on the YouTube homepage search bar, and you will find him. In the past, we have spoken with Greg about a lot of interesting topics, including personal leadership development, business leadership, servant leadership, how to have a fulfilling and productive day, the common misconceptions about the law of attraction, and most recently, effective communication. I believe we've had two podcasts with that as our topic. So, Greg, welcome to our 14th podcast together.
Well, thank you, Vic. It's a pleasure. I always enjoy getting together with you on these podcasts and looking forward to having a good podcast with you today.
Well, this will be good because it's been almost a month and a half or more, and I've just enjoyed the whole series. People ask about it, and people have commented around the world, actually, about enjoying these podcasts. So the last time we ended the program promising some insights regarding communication from the late Dr. Stephen Covey. Most everyone, at least in your world, in the world of education and leadership, knows Stephen Covey. So, Greg, what are some of the powerful ideas that Dr. Covey taught?
Vic, that's a great question. And last time we also talked about the five levels of listening. You may remember that. And the deepest one that we all want to strive for is empathic listening. That's listening and responding to both the heart and mind to understand the speaker's words and their intent and their feelings. And Dr. Covey was just outstanding in the way that he used phrases and the way that he constructed sentences to teach and to help us to understand a more effective communication. So I'm going to start off with one, and I want to encourage you to comment on any of these because you certainly have seen and experienced a lot of the things that Dr. Covey says here. And at the same time, I think it helps us to begin to put together the previous two podcasts and kind of consolidate some of our thoughts, reinforce some of the things that we've already spoken about. So here's one thing that he said. He says, each of us tends to think we see things as they are, that we are objective. But that is not the case, Dr. Covey said. We see the world not as it is, but as we are, or as we are conditioned to see it. And that's the real struggle that human beings have with communicating with one another. For example, let's take a look at the present situation with Iran and Israel. Israel sees the world as they are. They have 5,000 years of Jewish history. They have their own religious beliefs. They have the Old Testament and the history of King David and all the persecution that the Jews have experienced for thousands and thousands of years. So they see the world as they are, as Jews. On the other hand, you take a look at a nation like Iran. They're a Persian culture. They also have a rich ancient history, but they view the world from the perspective of where they are. And that is that rich Persian history and also the Islamic influence on the nation and on the peoples. So they're not seeing the world as the Jewish people do. They're not seeing the world as Americans see it. They are seeing the world as they are, or as they are conditioned to see it. And that is the heart and core of why there's so much conflict in the world. And it's only by learning to listen, by learning to ask the right questions, by receiving feedback, and practicing that active listening, can we begin to transcend seeing the world in a limited way as only as we are, and be able and begin to see the world truly as it is.
Well, one thing, Greg, that I have found that in just going over the entirety of your list, now the 14th one that we're going through, is that there's a theme of leadership, there's a theme of, you know, directing things, but a big part of it, and I see even from some of the notes that you made here, is a matter of our heart and the way we view others, which has to do not only with viewing them, but also having care for them, respecting them. And what we see right now in the world is just a total breakdown of respect, integrity, of honesty, all those things. And we keep saying those things all over again. We have a world war. It kills a lot of people, destroys a lot of things. Another generation arises, and we do it all over again. But the principles that you're talking about, if practiced, would certainly bring about people who would not only listen to each other, but also truly care about the other person. And I believe that some of the values that we have, you know, spiritually really speak to that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Vic, to highlight, getting beyond just seeing the world as we are, I'd like to tell you a little joke. So a man joins a monastery, and this is a monastery where everyone has to take a vow of silence. And every 10 years, you are allowed to say just two words. So the man joins the monastery, 10 years go by, the abbot calls him in to his office. He says, you're able to say two words. The man says, bed hard. The abbot says, thank you very much, you can go back to work. Another 10 years go by, 20 years now, the abbot calls him back into his office and he says, you are allowed to say two words. He says, food bad. Thank you, says the abbot, sends him back to work. Another 10 years go, now 30 years, the abbot calls him into his office and says, you can say two words. The man says, I quit. The abbot says, well, I'm not surprised. You've been complaining since the day you got here.
So from the
abbot's perspective, these six words from his world were completely negative. He's never been happy. And that's an example of seeing the world as we are rather than the world as it is.
Right.
Let me bring you another statement by Stephen Covey that I think will help tie together some of these things. I'm going to quote him here. As you learn to listen deeply to other people, you will discover tremendous differences in perception. You will also begin to appreciate the impact that these differences can have as people try to work together in interdependent situations. And what Covey is saying here is we all have tremendous differences in perception because we all have different backgrounds. Some of us have different ethnic values. Some of us have different levels of education in different parts of the world. So our perceptions are radically different for most people. An example I brought out a few minutes ago, the perceptions between Iran and Israel are dramatically different between the two of them. And certainly there are other areas in the world in which there are tremendous differences in perception. So again, he starts out the paragraph, as you learn to listen deeply to other people. And again, that is practicing that active listening we talked about, learning to suspend our prejudgment, learning not to be thinking about someone else as an individual is talking, not to be constructing how we're going to respond to what they're saying instead of listening and hearing them out. But as we begin to deeply listen to other people, it can make a tremendous difference in our one-on-one relationships, and it could make a tremendous difference in the relationships between nations in this world.
This is a year of an election, and there is, of course, a lot of back and forth going, and there's a position that each side takes, which sticks very, very staunchly to a particular point of view. And an interesting thing happened here because, you know, in our culture, you know, the culture that you and I are in tends to be conservative and tends to see things a particular way and, you know, the values that we have. But I was talking to one person. Actually, this was talking with the former First Lady of Indiana. My wife and I had a chance to, she invited us over to her farm here a couple of weeks ago. And we had a really nice afternoon that we spent with her. We were involved with work and bringing children over to get them to get them treated medically. And I traveled with her to Russia, translated for her, and we kind of developed a friendship. But anyway, she was a former first lady, and she had particular views that were different from mine. And, markedly different. It was interesting to talk to her because, you know, she expressed those views to me. In fact, she was very compassionate about people, you know, very, very compassionate about things that we say, this is the law, this is the way it's got to be. You know, she was very compassionate towards what's happening, you know, in the world, even towards, you know, the immigration tragedy that's occurring at our border. But I saw another point of view from her about the problem behind the problem, that we can't just fix things by fiat and just saying this is the way it's going to be, we're going to change, and here's, let's kick them all out and all that. It's got to be fixed in a different way. Also, people who may listen to another news source, such as National Public Radio, NPR, you know, which is very liberal, and some people find it to be very offensive to our values. But there are certain things that, you know, people need to understand where they're coming from and why they have that. We can still hold on to our position, but I feel it's very, very important to be, if I can just say, open-minded about a number of things, not that we just jump from one side to another, but there are so many positions. In fact, we are subscribers to one particular channel that is very, very pro-conservative, but this month I'm cutting them off because I'm just tired of hearing the same old thing, you know. Playing over and over again how President Biden's stumbling, walking up the stairs on an airplane. You know, enough of that. It's time to grow up. It's a time to see a broader view and to have greater understanding. If we're going to be people who we purport to be those rebuilding the world, we have to be very, very cautious and driven by principles and really believe them and really care for the people. We're not going to, in the future, just throw people away because they are of a different party or anything. And in my work, in humanitarian work, I find that even with people who are of a different, perhaps, sense of where I am with my faith and all, people who may have even been enemies, but I find that they get just as hungry as our people do. They need encouragement as much as we do. And they need an arm around their shoulders, and we have no idea what these people are going through. So a broader, more leader position is one to have compassion based upon being able to understand people and be genuine about it. So that's my little soapbox here.
Oh, that's excellent. And you highlight the fact that, again, the greatest form of respect and dignity that we can offer another human being is to listen to them, is to hear them out. Because the truth is that a person's perception is their reality. Mm-hmm. I have a graphic I usually show when I'm talking about this point to my clients, and it's a little kitty cat looking into a mirror. What the kitty cat sees is this big roaring lion, yet the kitty cat is just a little kitty cat. But when he looks into the mirror, that's what he sees. That is his perception, his reality. And we can't help people to understand things differently if we're not taking the time to actively listening to them. Again, we don't have to necessarily accept what they're saying. We don't have to change our values, but we certainly have no opportunity to help them to change their perception, to change their reality, if we're not listening to them and getting to the core of how and why they feel like they do. And that only happens when we practice active listening and we're receiving feedback from them. Only then does that door have an opportunity to open and we have a chance to impact the way that they think. Mm-hmm. A few other sayings of Dr. Covey that I think would be helpful. He says, most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. Mm-hmm. Again, that is a common human struggle. I may have mentioned before in a previous podcast about, you know, an ancient American Indian civilizations, how they had a talking stick, and when an important decision had to be made, only the brave with the talking stick was allowed to talk until he was done, and then someone else had that opportunity with the talking stick. And that reinforced the fact that we need to be here to understand that the goal isn't to just reply to everything and try to hog the arena and not try to take over the conversation, but to truly have the intent to listen to someone and hear them out. Another thing Covey said, he said, you can learn great things from your mistakes when you aren't busy denying them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mm-hmm. another common human trait. We tend to slough off our own mistakes and our own issues. And when we do that, when we deny the things that we're struggling with, maybe our biases, maybe the fact that we're not listening or not very good listeners, when we are denying that, and we're not growing from those opportunities. So our mistakes can only be overcome when we stop living in denial and when we begin to say, hey, you know, I need to listen more. You know what? I need to ask more questions before I come to a determination or a judgment on mm-hmm. this matter. Another thing Covey said is we cannot always choose what happens to us, but we can choose our responses.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't always choose a negative event. The negative events are going to happen. You and I were talking about before we started some of the negative events that are going on in the world right now, and the terrible suffering in Ukraine and other areas, certainly other areas of the world, Gaza and Israel and many areas of the world where people are struggling. But the key that I think that we need to understand is that we can't change those events, but what we can do is choose our response
mm-hmm.
and not allow it to drag us into a tailspin downward, but to realize that there are people that are suffering, to empathize for them and with them, to help them in any way that we can, but to also accept and understand that we live in a very fragile and very dangerous world, where in reality there has always been suffering, and the news doesn't highlight all the suffering going on in the world. There are other areas of the world in which there are terrible famines and things going on as you and I speak, but it doesn't hit the front page of the news. Right now, it's not being covered by the media. So we can't decide what's going to happen in the world. Just some dark and negative things are going to happen, but we can choose to try to respond in the most productive way that we can to help others who are suffering. And as a humanitarian, I think you, of course, know and understand that there are certain things that can be done to minimize suffering. There are things that can be done to alleviate levels of suffering, even though we can't make the suffering go away. And we can't fix the world, but we can do what we can to help minimize people who are going through tremendous trauma at this time in history and in our world events.
Right. And a lot of that takes some experience in knowing what to do and when to do it, what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
Even there's
yes.
a lot of things that shouldn't be done and should be done better. I know that right now in South Central Africa, they're going through crops that have failed. And mm-hmm. same thing with West Africa. We have a mm-hmm. common problem through there. And it's terrible because they've lost their crop, and what is little bit left of it, the armyworms have come in and taken it. And unless something is done right now, they're going to be people going through a famine. So just this past week, you know, or the last couple of weeks, we've been mm-hmm. able to find sources of food that can be still bought at a reasonable rate. You know, we just shipped 8 tons of food to Malawi. If we waited it any longer, the price of food would skyrocket, would be just off the scale. But it just takes time to be able to find out what needs to be done and how these people can be helped. It takes mm-hmm. takes that experience and listening.
Another thing that Stephen Covey said that I think is essential, and we've touched upon this a couple of podcasts ago, he said, quote, trust is the glue of life. It's the most essential ingredient in effective communication. It's the foundational principle that holds all relationships, end of quote. So without trust, there's no credibility, there is no respect, and we have to all work very, very hard to make sure that we are people who can be trusted, that we keep our word. When we make a promise, we keep that promise, that we live lives of integrity, that we live lives that truly care about the needs and the struggles of other people, live lives that have empathy, And that is all part of trust and being a trustful person and being someone that people can trust. Because as he says, that's literally the glue of life. Whether you're a child living in a home, you need to trust your parents. You have a spouse, you need to have a trusting relationship with your spouse. The business environment you work in, you need to trust your coworkers or else there's going to be chaos inside of that organization. You look at the political situation in the United States today, the political environment, what a disaster it is because no one trusts anyone anymore. Its polls show that the average American doesn't trust the political parties, doesn't trust the politicians, doesn't trust the judges. For years, there were many particular professions that were held in the highest esteem by the American people. And almost every one of those had eroded dramatically because people just don't trust anyone anymore. And that's a real problem. And that's a terrible issue because that's the fabric of our society is literally coming apart at the seams.
Yeah, that's very, very sad because people who are in leadership positions and communicate values of leadership should be those that you say, aha, he's saying something that I can use. But right now, you know, they did a listing of people that are most trustworthy, and thankfully still ministry is still ranked very highly on that. But the people who are at the very bottom were congressmen and used car salesmen. I mean, that was at the very bottom. Those are the people that were ranked at the very bottom because you just don't trust what they say. Mm-hmm. And what they say today may be true for them in their mind, but it wasn't true last week, and it may not be true. And in an election year with the things that are spouted off in negative campaigning, you know, you say, is this the way people should act? I know it's a campaign. I know it's theater. It's drama. But these are not the kinds of values that we live by that you would entrust your life to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, you know, you mentioned about trust and Covey. You know, I really, really liked his book, At the Speed of Trust, which was a sort of a trilogy to the books here. I've got Principle-Centered Leadership and, of course, the big one, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. But trust is huge. And if that erodes in any number of spheres, whether it be marriage, you know, fidelity in marriage is extremely important. In fact, it's it, you know, pretty much that,
yes.
You know, faithfulness to your, you know, to your faithfulness to your friends, you know, true friendships, you know, you have people that you can confide in and who can help you through difficult times, but trust is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. Something else I'll quote from Dr. Covey on regarding trust. He said, trust is a function of two things, character and competence. Mm-hmm. Character includes your integrity, your motive, and your intent with people. Confidence, competence includes your capabilities, your skills, and your track record. Both are vital. So as Dr. Covey says, those are two very important qualities, character and competence, that together define our level of trustworthiness. And it's important that we walk the walk. It's important that we are living with integrity, that we have the right motives, that we're not trying to manipulate other people with our own ideas, with our own opinions, and that we are a competent people, that we're continually improving our skills, that our track record shows us to be people of integrity and competence. And together, that's what helps us to be looked upon from others as a trustworthy person.
One thing you brought up, and this is the other question that may be worth an entire podcast, is about communication through writing, you know, what we put in writing. And that would be not only writing letters and statements, but also in social media, which could be altogether something very, very big to talk about. But there are communication things that we do in writing that we should do that maybe don't work too well in person. There are also things that we shouldn't do that should be done in person. And I'd like you to comment about this because I'm a person who writes a lot of memos. You know, I like to write things, but I'll maybe say from the get-go, because I want to make sure I get this point in, is that I feel like never, ever, ever, ever write something critical or scolding to a person in writing. it looks awful when the person receives it. You know, they get something at early in the morning, and it just wrecks their whole day because you're upset about something. They're always say things to people that are uplifting. Praise would be things, you know, to in writing. But if you want to talk to somebody about a change, and that is necessary sometimes to do, do it in person, do it on the telephone, do it with preparatory, do it where there's also audio and visual feedback in it. Anyway, I kind of started it and maybe said a little too much here, but please, let's go ahead with this point.
Sure, no, you're fine. I think the key to remember is that written words stay on paper much longer than spoken words hang in the air. And the problem of the 21st century is whether it's a memo or an email, it can be so easily forwarded to millions of people all over the world. So if we send something that is inappropriate, and by the way, email usually comes across as harder, harsher than it was originally intended. That's just the nature of email. You can't see the person smile. You can't see their demeanor. You can't really understand their tone because it's just words on the screen. So it's very easy to perceive the intent of that email is to be much harsher than was originally sent. And there are some things that should be said in person, never should be said in writing. And some things should never be written or said in the workplace. Insensitive remarks towards people, that is inexcusable in the 21st century. And there are liability issues if you're working for someone and you're making racial stereotypes or gender-oriented comments about females or males in the workplace, sexually motivated remarks in writing or in person. Those are the kind of things that's probably going to cost you your job and perhaps result in litigation for you and or your company if you're saying those kinds of things or writing those kinds of things. So here are some of the things not to put in writing. First of all, something that's personal and confidential information, unless the rare exception might be that it's clearly labeled, you know, confidential only, and you consider the risk. And again, the risk is if you say something in there that is poorly stated, that violates some rule of propriety, that person can just forward that email to any number of individuals and make you look really bad. So that's certainly something you don't want to put in writing. That's when you want to pick up the phone. You should not put something in writing when you are angry or frustrated. As I said, it's just going to come across as even harsher than you intended. It's always good to follow what's called the 24-hour rule. When you are really upset, when you are really angry, when you are really frustrated, before you respond, always wait 24 hours. And what that does is, yes, when you comment on that, either verbally or in writing, you'll still have a particular point of view. But the edge that you had when you were immediately angered or frustrated through that period of time, you'll soften a little bit and you'll be more methodical in the way that you word and the phraseology you use. If you send something in writing immediately when you're angry or frustrated, we're probably going to have a knee-jerk reaction and try to hurt the person and try to be spiteful. And again, that's just going to blow up in our face. So always follow that 24-hour rule before getting something off your chest. It's a really good business principle. We should never put something in writing that has off-color humor, that can be offensive and insensitive. Things that are very sarcastic are not good in writing because, again, it comes across as even more sarcastic than we intended. And if it's forwarded to someone, it will not be received in a positive way. We should never put anything that's strongly corrective in writing. That's the kind of thing we just need to pick up a phone, or better yet, sit down with someone out of love and compassion and have a one-on-one conversation with them. If we feel a need to correct them on something that they're doing, should never be done in writing. Never have the details of distressing news or information in an email. If there's been an accident, please don't put all the details of, you know, how bad the accident was, and there was blood everywhere, and you know, the ambulance was there, and you know how distressing it can be anyway, reading something like that. So we should never have the details of distressing news or information in writing. That's something else that we should be picking up the phone to talk about.
Right.
So those are some of the things that we should never put in writing, but the appropriate thing to do is to pick up the phone and talk to someone. In some cases, to be looking at them, you know, across from a table or one-on-one, and having a mature discussion with them about some of these challenges.
Yeah, otherwise it's a person who's late at night, you know, sit there maybe after a couple of drinks or so, and he gets emboldened to just start typing, and he doesn't realize the damage that he's causing by the state of mind that they're in and what they're doing. So it's very, very important. One thing that I've learned in doing work with reconciliation and conflict resolution, and I feel like it really applies to written communication, is never really use the word you in a way of accusing. Like, here's what you have done. Here's what you... Now, the word you is a big one. It's a big one in advertising. You know, you can win this. You know, that's one of the big number one words, you know, in advertising. How important the colors of red, yellow, and using you is important. But never use it to, you have done this and you have done that. You know, I've seen some horrible, horrible memos that could have been softened and that could have really helped the situation if they had used other pronouns, such as, a lot of times we don't like to use the word I, but using the word I takes responsibility and takes ownership of the situation to yourself, where,
right.
No, I have come to see this, or I would like to let you know how this affected me, whatever. You're the one who is the object of the not the negativity necessarily, but you're not throwing and casting accusation towards them. And then maybe migrate from the word I to the word we. Well, maybe, you know, I see this. Maybe we, you know, can see it in this way instead of you. You know, you're the bad guy. And I have found that to be very, very helpful in marriage counseling, is that you have done this. You haven't been performing this. You haven't been doing that. Instead of saying, I feel this way. I feel hurt, offended, and can we maybe work on this together? And use that in writing where it can come through much softer about delicate situations.
Yeah, excellent. That's one of those famous, what they call gunpowder words that are part of our language. And we should always avoid phrases like, you never, right? You always, because frankly, that's not true. I mean, a person may the majority of the time do something or not do something, but those kind of phrases are just hurtful. They're very judgmental, and they usually are not true. They're usually not the complete reality of what's going on.
Well, this has been just very, very helpful. And I feel, Greg, that there's probably lots of things here that we could, you know, follow up on. Talking to you, I might like to solicit our audience here and say that if there's something here that you have found to be interesting that you would like us to talk about, maybe write to us. Write to us at the address that I have at the end of this podcast, because Greg Thomas and I would really like to have some feedback of what you think and also what you would like us to discuss. Thank you very much, Greg. Always enjoy having you, and looking forward to the next time around.
Well, thank you, Vic. It's been enlightening, and it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to us today on The Cubic Report. We welcome you to share this podcast and tell your friends about it. We can be found on a variety of platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts, Pandora, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, and many other platforms. You can easily find us at any browser address box by typing in the words, The Cubic Report, and there we are. Remember, Cubic is spelled K-U-B-I-K. So we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at vcubic@gmail.com. That's vkubik@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. Come back soon for more.